My name is Christine Navarro. I'm interviewing Mr. Smith. Good morning again.
Good morning.
I just have a few follow-up questions regarding your work at the Wilcox Farm Bureau. Can you tell me, you said you got the job from John?
Robertson.
Can you tell me a little bit about him, what he was like?
John was a great guy. Come from a rich family. Became poor himself through his own weakness, I assume. And well educated, graduated from I believe a college in maybe in Texas, but it could have been Mexico. And I don't remember how he got to Wilcox, Arizona. He was very familiar with farming. He was a great manager, and as I said earlier, he was half Spanish and half Anglo, and raised in Kerrville, Texas, but his family was from Mexico because they built that train. So that part of the railroad, not the train. Other than that, I don't know much about him. You know, I know a lot about his personal life, but I'm talking about as far as a man, yeah. Good guy, honest, hard worker.
How did you learn Spanish?
Well, when I in Las Cruces, when I was in Mesilla Park, is where I started school, all Mexicans. And, you know, you get whipped about three times a day by a Mexican, and you don't understand what in the heck they're saying, then you need to step up to the plate, partner. And that's what I did. But I will say this about my brother. I have three brothers that can speak Spanish. Two brothers that are not able to much. My sisters didn't speak Spanish, even though one married a Mexican. But, and I refer to that with tongue in cheek. I'm not saying the N-word, you know. But that's the way I learned Spanish. And I liked it. And I liked the people. I tell my kids, I shouldn't say that. We'll wait till that's over.
Okay. Were they surprised seeing you, Mr. Smith? You're Anglo and you're very white looking, speaking beautiful Spanish as you do. Were they surprised in the initial reaction?
That's always, yeah, it is still till today. I have 20 plus Mexicans that come on my property daily that are landscapers that speak very little English. I guess the reason I have them is because I always have my arm around them. And when the tamale time comes, they better bring some tamales if they want to come here. So it's, I guess for being an Anglo, I'm probably a Mexican because when we were kids, we traded, my mom, we traded biscuits for tortillas at school. The Mexican wanted the biscuit bad because he didn't get biscuits. We wanted a tortilla with beans in it. So I guess the whole experience of life made me want to talk Spanish. I don't know.
Can you tell me, just tell me, walk me through your daily routine at the Farm Bureau. You got the phone call, you knew how many men, how that would occur. And then we'll go from there.
What we did, as I said earlier, we would have orders from our farmers that were members. Outside members, I didn't state that to her a while ago. Outside people could it wasn't a closed organization. Outside people that weren't members could actually come in and contract men. They'd have to pay the fee just like everybody else. But my daily thing, back to your question, my daily thing was to go in, and then if I had to go, sometimes I'd have to go pick up men. Say a farmer was turning loose with 30 men that were actually going to be going to Mexico. We'd bring them back. Nine times out of 10, I'd come back to the office. We'd process them, take their name off of or make a manifest that we had a farm for that from the government, the Department of Labor. We'd do that, and then we would go to El Paso, let's say. We had, especially in the busy time when we were coming and going and all of that. So that was my daily thing. I had nothing to do with membership or John took care of all of that part. I was the gopher.
Who regulated the Farm Bureau at that time?
Board of directors regulated the Farm Bureau. You need to get that?
No. Can you tell me, when you got, you talked about Rio Vista, can you describe what Rio Vista looked like at that time to me, please? In El Paso, the processing center.
Is that correct? What they called it?
Rio That's Vista? What they called it. I apologize.
Isn't that awful? You threw me because I don't want to remember that in the world. What did I, back to your question.
Can you describe what it looked like at that time at Rio Vista? With
God. Isn't that awful? No, other than the fact that, no.
Okay, can
I
you,
can't.
You arrived at the Rio Vista. Same. Can you tell me what you did? Did you, who
yeah,
you spoke to?
Immediately went in with our proper papers and the labor, there'd be a person there from the Department of Labor and they processed it. Then we'd go to the, isn't that awful? That was a darn, that it was a, God, it was a building, were we? Then we'd go in where the processing was, and of course there'd be maybe another dozen guys like me that were there doing that. You had to be approved by the government. I had a certificate or some license or something saying that I was approved to process Mexican nationals. We called them Mexican nationals, actually. Didn't call them braceros. We called them Mexican nationals.
Do you remember from what other areas they came from? You said
from Denver City, Lubbock, Colorado. A lot of Colorado come to El Paso. They processed a lot of men to work in the fields. Beets, a lot of things in Colorado, all over Texas. Pecos, all from Pecos north, all the way to Amarillo. Northern New Mexico, Portales, Hobbs, Roswell. Clovis, all in that area. They come there and got me in.
We've heard stories about Pecos. Were people hesitant to go to Pecos, braceros? Were they hesitant to go to Pecos?
You know, there was some deal early on in the darn thing that Pecos wasn't a good place to go, and I can't attest to that. I probably knew at the time. You know, because they, for some silly reason, they closed out. They wouldn't let them, they quit letting them go to Pecos. And I can't remember what the deal was because the reason I know that is we bought for our barracks, we went to Pecos and bought a whole bunch of Army, we used Army cots, double deck cots. And so we went to Pecos and got two semi loads of cots and mattresses and took them to our barracks that were in a big barracks in Pecos. That's funny you'd bring that up, but that's as far as I can go with it. I don't know the particulars.
Okay. So you picked up the men, you chose the men, and you drove back. Can you tell me what the kind of, do you remember any conversations you may have had with the men driving back?
Well, it's just like a bunch of, yeah. I mean, yes and no. It's just like when you get a bunch of guys together, you know, you talk about family, you talk about women, you talk about, try to tell some horror stories. I used to try to tell them about, boy, when you get there, you better watch out for rattlesnakes, and there'll be one on every corner, and, you know, and then one guy would believe it, and then all the rest of them would go to riding him for, you know, because he believed it. And yeah, that was a fun thing, just. Anything to break the monotony. Some of them slept, you know.
Did they get a sack lunch at Rio Vista for the drive back?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Do you remember what was in that sack lunch?
I think it was bologna sandwich, if I remember correctly. Bologna sandwich and maybe there was a fruit in it of some sort, either an orange or an apple.
Can you tell me the names of the farms? Do you remember any farm, the names of the farms or the ranches in Wilcox area?
Mitchell's and Elfrida, they're all dead. Some of the heirs are still down there. In Bowie, the Hilburns Farms. in the Taylor farm. Wilcox would be, who was the biggest guy that used the most men there is, I guess it's Smelslin. I can't spell the darn name. Can't remember. There was a lot of little guys in Wilcox. Wilcox was a place where there'd be 8 or 10 people. Or you didn't put out a whole lot of big groups there. Elfrida you did, because there were some bigger farms down there. But that's the ones that come to mind real. You know, it's funny about this thing. I haven't thought about it in so many, other than the fact that what I just said a while ago about a way to bring these people here, that's the only way I've really thought about this thing. Occasionally, about a year ago, there was a large article in the Tucson paper about that program. And I read that, and I think I probably cut it out, but Lord knows where in the world I put it. But I've always been interested in this thing, and my wife, and as I said, that's the reason my wife, I don't know how far we got away from what you asked me, but that's the reason my wife encouraged me. I probably wouldn't have done it, because my memory doesn't, the stuff that I really need to tell you that I can't remember right.
Oh, you're doing great.
And I'm not going to tell it, I'm not going to tell it just to tell a darn story. I want it to be straight, you know. But anyway, back to what you asked me about, what would you do, and what we did, and that's what we did. We had fun.
Can you tell me a little bit about when a bracero would get hurt on the farm in Wilcox? You said they were taken to the doctor. Did you have to be notified at the bureau?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, you bet.
And what would happen?
Well, we made a note of it, and we kept it. We had to keep there again. That was governed by the Department of Labor, even if we didn't care. You know, I'm not saying we didn't care, but that was governed by the Department of Labor. We had a problem in Wilcox, and I can put it on tape because the guy's dead now. Every damn time we'd take somebody in with a toothache, he'd get operated on for appendicitis. This damned old doctor took appendicitis out of every poor devil that come in there. Finally, he got blacklisted by a company by the call American Standard Life Insurance Company out of Oklahoma City, carried all of the bracettos. That was the design for that. He made a fortune. Nice guy. And he did not govern you on taking care of your men. But when this all started happening in Wilcox, there was only one other doctor there. I believe it was one other doctor. He was the only doctor that these men were allowed to see. And then the state took care of this other guy. But he was terrible.
Can you tell us his name?
You know, I don't remember it.
That's okay.
I could tell you if I remembered it. My wife asked me that last evening, and I don't remember.
Now, you said, would the Department of Labor come and monitor?
Yeah, they monitored the books.
They did
a guy. I guess the guy in Wilcox lived here in Tucson, I'm sure, because he didn't live in Wilcox. So I'm sure the guy, they only used one guy would take care of the southern part of our state and possibly all the state. I don't know, maybe they had some more in Phoenix, because lots of bracettos in Phoenix area. You know, because there's lots of cotton up there and a lot of fruit. So they picked fruit. Yuma, a lot of them in Yuma. But in Yuma, they come through San Luis. I can't even think of the name of the town now, but what would you ask me?
Oh, you did great. Can you tell me how often the Department of Labor would come down to monitor your books? Once a week, twice a week?
On the plains, they were probably there. They were at call, on call, and they were probably there once a week. If a bracero, if a Mexican national, he had a number too. So he wasn't naked. When he come here, he had a number that he could call. He had two numbers. He had the Mexican consulate, and he had three numbers. He had the American consulate, Mexican consulate, and Department of Labor. So if the Department of Labor got a guy called on a complaint like food or something, or he got mistreated, you know, some way or another, then they'd be there immediately. They were on call. But about once a week is when they'd come by and kick the tires. You know, for lack of a better, just want to know if things are all right and are you doing, you know, and maybe go in the kitchen. But that was it.
Do you recall any time they were, the Department of Labor or the Mexican Consul was called out to the farms while you were down there?
No, ma'am.
No?
Okay. No, ma'am. Either place, neither Texas nor...
Really?
No.
So they never called?
Not that I know of.
But they would notify you, though.
Oh, God, I'd know it. Oh, absolutely. I could tell you in a heartbeat. That, no, I never, no, we never... You know, those things are, it's kind of funny about that. And those guys were scared, you know, it'd be just like us going down there. They didn't come up here all huerty and, you know, macho. And I mean, they were pretty meek folks, you know, and that's one thing I tried to do, was to keep them from thinking that, because that's the reason I walked through that barracks and did that, you know, because I didn't want him to think that we were anything but human beings. And maybe I got it done because I didn't have any problems with it.
Would they tell you if they had any problems when you
drove
them back?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yeah. They'd tell you they wanted more tortillas, or if it pertained to food, if they need medical. Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, I'd say, hey, let's go. Let's get something done. You know, toothache. Well, the general things that happen in the service, if you had a bunch of men, or any place you had a bunch of people in an enclosed area, you were the papa, you know, you had to take care of them. And we did.
So they could come to you?
Oh,
and...
God, yes. Yeah, they come. A lot of times they go to Frank. But if I was in the barracks, Frank's usually with me. But if I just went in there by myself, then they'd talk to me about it if they had a problem. But they usually went to Frank. And I had pretty strict rules with Frank. I didn't let him become a guy that, you know, that, oh, hell, he's just talking. I didn't let those things happen. Because if he made mention of a guy and he says, you know, old so-and-so, he's always complaining or something. I didn't always let that go slide over, because I'd go to the guy and talk to him myself and just make sure that Frank wasn't... Because, you know, he was the big head empty, you know, and so you didn't want him to become a general on you, and that's that story.
You talked about on Sundays they would go into town. Can you tell me what town they would go into?
Plainview? Yeah, it was 25 miles from where I was actually at, and we'd go in there, and they'd stay, probably 5-6 hours.
And just see them, they'd all come at one time. Now, would the stores cater to them?
Yeah, they'd open up for them. And if they were normally closed on Sundays, well, I would call, and then one guy would tell half a dozen, like jewelry, ropa, and grocery stores, things like that. If the grocery store was already open, well, maybe, but like the jewelry stores and the... It's funny I'd say that, and it's funny they'd be interested in jewelry, but they were interested in the jewelry store. And I don't know how much they bought, I don't know anything about it, but because that was one of the guys that gave me a darn nice watch. You know, not an expensive watch, but a watch, and of course I was still poor as the dickens. Anything would have been great. I would have been glad to have had it, you know, but anyway, the ropa, boy, they bought a lot of ropa for family. They sent ropa home, you know.
Would they take it back with them on the buses?
Or they'd mail it.
Yeah. They'd mail the rope out to them.
Oh, yeah, bet.
Really?
Oh, they'd mail dresses and for the kiddos, little kids' clothes. Yeah, especially if they were making real good money. Oh, you bet. Oh, they were. I can't say anything except 100% for family. God, that was the reason they were here, and that's the reason I'm going to do right. We never did have, I never did have a call from a Mexican consulate about a guy not doing anything like he was supposed to do or something. The only thing you used to have is you'd have the wife write a letter, or they'd go through the consulate about he needed to be home because of so-and-so. And that would go through the priest. The priest usually governed those things, as you guys know, if you're strong Catholic or if you're not strong Catholic. They really govern those little towns. You know, they're the kind of the go-to guy. So those kind of things govern these guys, family-wise, too.
Did the Mexican consulate, did you talk with them often or see them often?
No, we didn't talk to those guys at all. they usually went through our people, but I never even talked to any other American council.
Okay.
Department of Labor is the furthest we ever had to go. I'm sure that some associations had more trouble than others if they maybe weren't managed. And I'm not saying I was that strong a manager. I was just a guy that did it 7 days a week. So I tried to make my thing as good as I could because it made it easy on me, you know. But I can't answer for... I don't remember. My brother was 15 miles from me. He never had any problems. He did the same thing I did. We were both trying to make a living the same as they were. So it was no different.
You mentioned about the envelopes of the money that they would give you. Mm-hmm. Do you remember what bank that you would get the cashier's check from?
Oh, Lord. In Plainview, Texas, there's... Golly, there's a... I remember First National Bank, which was one of the bigger banks there. I think that was probably the bank that our co-op used. And it was quite a task. The tellers usually didn't like to see you come in because it was going to be a wild happening, you know.
How many would you come in with, for instance?
Oh, Lord, anywhere from 30 to 50 or 60. You know, and maybe one for $10, $8, $30, $20. It was the denominator. Usually they did that on an every other week basis. They wait till they got like two paychecks, and then they two pay periods. And then I'd take it in the envelope. And you talk about someone being sincere, I mean, being totally honest with, I mean, I can't think of the proper word. For you to work your guts out and turn right around and hand a guy that's in charge of you, and I mean, I'd have a stack of the darn things, you know, and you'd have a guy in charge of you take your money that you worked too dadgum hard with. I mean, you talk about trust, good Lord. And I'm sure that some of those guys didn't do it, you know. I'm sure they might probably never did trust anybody, or they did some other something to get their money to Mexico, but that's the way we did it for them.
You mentioned another way to send the money. Was there any Western Unions or any way to send it through Western Union for them?
I don't remember that ever happening.
So it was mainly cashier's checks.
In my case, cashier's checks. I do not remember anything about Western Union.
Now, I'm interested in how they would mail the boxes. Would that be during the week, or they would give that to you?
They'd give it to us. Okay. We'd take it to the post office.
Okay. And was there a fee for, did you charge them postage or?
They got to pay the postage. Okay. I didn't charge them anything.
Okay. Now, and the bank, did the bank charge them the fee?
Yeah, they charged them. No, they didn't charge a fee. I charged a fee. I got a dollar. If I remember correctly, I got a dollar. They paid me a dollar.
And you probably took the fee out of that.
And I took, it was in there. If they were going to send $40, they'd be $41 in here. Okay. Or what? If I remember correctly, that's what they paid me to do that. Okay. And then, I just took it back to them. Well, there was a post office about three blocks from this barracks. So they could actually walk to the post office themselves and send boxes, you know, if they got off work in time. If they didn't, then me or Frank or I wouldn't take it down there.
How was the reaction in the town of Plainview when they would see these men coming? I mean,
I don't know of any American, especially prejudiced. Texas is very prejudiced. Mm-hmm. And they thought that it was, my wife worked for me in the summertime in the office, and one of the board directors called me aside and he said, "How can you possibly trust your wife working around all of these damn Mexicans in the office?" And it dumbfounded me, because I'd never been prejudiced, and I'd been around with Mexicans all my life. You know, what difference did it make? That's the first thing I thought, well, Jesus Christ, what difference does this make? And I told him, "No, I don't have any problem with it." He said, "Boy," he said, "I sure would." And that was the end of that thing. So they were very prejudiced, but as far as what you asked me, none. No, nobody ever. That was a different time in America. You didn't have the graffiti thing and the drug thing wasn't prevalent like it is today. A different world. It was just a different, absolutely different world.
Well, if I like to move on over to about the co-op that you worked in, how many, on average, would you think, how many bracetas would you have a day that would be returned to you?
You mean sent out and returned? Well, we'd send that whole barracks out, and if there was 300 men in the barracks, or if there was 500, we'd send them all out, and then they'd be, it was quite hectic in the mornings and the evenings. Not so much in the evenings, because they just jump out and go to their comma, you know, or whatever. But in the mornings, it was real hectic, because you had all these groups that had to get on. Maybe you had the special ones, like I said about the darn pickle thing. I mean, the bean thing. Then the other guys maybe you'd have three guys or four guys that were tromping trailers. Cotton had to go in the trailer, and they had to get up there and tromp it down so he'd get more in it. So you had trailer trompers. And so, yeah, it was real hectic in the morning now. Oh, yeah, we sent out, God, it, as I said, ever what it took to clear the barracks. Maybe we'd have 500 at one time, and then 100 of those would leave, and then you'd only have 400, and then you'd be working with 300. You know, it just it varied as to the demand for the men. So, yeah, it was very hectic in the morning.
How many people worked for you at the co-op under you?
Just Frank and I ran that. Yeah, we ran. Well, I had a secretary in the office.
And how did you provide the food and all? I mean, was that
Frank managed? Ordered it, and they delivered it to the. It was 100-pound orders, you know, 200-pound orders, like menudo, tripe, and ever what chickens, and ever what we had in the main course. Then the grocery store would bring the tortillas and the everything. We had one guy that used to eat one dozen tortillas each meal. He was a big son of a gun and a hard-workingest guy. And Frank would come and put his arm around me, and he'd tell me, and he always talked to me in English. He said, Deke, he called me Deke. He said, Deke, your son is eating too many tortillas. He called him my son, you know. So he was he wasn't an old guy, he was a young guy. But anyway, yeah, they'd bring the food to us. We'd order it. Frank would order it. He made 100 pounds of langua or what he ordered, you know.
And who cooked it?
He did. With Frank? A group. He had He had a crew of 10 people.
Bracetas would cook it then?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, in the kitchen. Yeah. Frank supervised it. He was actually a cook with it in the Mexican Army. So he had a lot of knowledge when it came to cooking the food, you know. We just had those big pots and open flame burners, and so if he was serving menudo, well, you know, he had those little big pots, and they dipped it out on the guys come through a line with a tray, just like they do in the service. We bought trays from the secondhand stores they were old Army trays, U.S. and U.S. Army on them, most of them, or Marine Corps. So they in a line, went down a line, you know, and told, do you want this, they'd ask for more, and there were always plenty left over, and so they'd come back and get more if they wanted it.
Do you remember, you said menudo, you served a menudo, do you remember any other meals you might have served them?
Well, it was mole, chicken mole, I'm trying to think of that. Other meats that mostly the meats that they were used to eating, no first class stuff, stew, a Mexican stew with the, you know, chunks of beef and pork. Then they always had rice. Beans. You know, there was always a big thing we kept it all the time, of course. Then the only thing that changed was the meat product. It varied from day to day. The beans and rice stayed there, of course, the tortilla, salsa. Milk had the big containers of milk where you pushed them, the old type where you pushed them, we didn't serve. And then if we sent milk, we had the little cartons if we sent them out in the lunch thing. Sent them a little milk thing. If I remember correctly, it was he had to make all of those too. So those guys worked, some of them worked all night when we had a lot of men, because they had to get the lunches ready. And then they had to prepare for breakfast. They had to eat breakfast, scrambled eggs and beans and rice again. You know, so that was their diet.
But how did Frank keep the same men, or did he?
Yeah, same guys.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, same. He was good at keeping. He was a good guy. And so, well, some of them would leave. You know, they were Braceros, just the Mexican national, just like the, like we, like he was, you know. But most of the time, as I remember it, he kept them all. I don't remember him changing. If they did, they just went home and come back, because we called them specials.
What time did your day start, if you had so many, if you had a large...
Oh, gosh, his would start like 3 o'clock in the morning. I usually got there about 5, because the farmers, when the farmers start arriving, well, I needed to be there to... I'd have the manifest, and I'd be out there, you know, telling them to go here, go that. Frank would help, too, because by then his thing had begun to... He'd already served breakfast, so his thing had begun to dwindle down. So he'd help me get part of them out, you know. So he was really my Friday guy.
Can you tell me about the housing? You said that you bought cots. Did you provide blankets?
Oh, yes. Blankets, sheets. We had a laundry service that picked up the sheets. Pillows and blankets. Usually gave them, in the wintertime, they'd get 2 blankets, but we had those big heaters in there, and then we kept that thing on a certain temperature. If they got cold, Frank gave them another blanket. Most of the time, that stuff didn't get to me unless there was a problem.
Did you ever hear of any problems?
Oh, yeah. He'd get sore at somebody for wanting to keep asking and asking, you know, and they'd come to me and want to know if there's any way, and I'd say, well, why didn't you talk to Frank about it? And say, we did, but he didn't want to give us one. It's okay, come on. So, yeah, those kind of things. As I said, you know, those guys get the same the same guy complaining all the time, and so you don't want to listen to him anymore. So that's where, you know, that's where I come in. But anyway,
you mentioned about the strike and removing the men, the 6 men that you had trouble with. Were they all from the same town? Do you know?
No, I couldn't tell you that.
Okay.
There's probably good odds that they were. And they were, there's always a troublemaker. And I think probably we were aware of these guys maybe even before this thing all started. Frank probably was, because he was the womanizer. I don't mean to belittle you guys, but he was the guy that was doing all the listening, you know. So, no, I don't, but I know they went to Mexico. That much I can tell you. Real fast.
When you picked up the men at Rio Vista, could you tell what area of...
I couldn't tell by standing there.
Okay.
Only time I knew is when I got the paperwork. When they gave me the paperwork, it had their name and their town and their age and that part. That's what was on the manifest.
How would you choose whether to go to El Paso or to go to Nogales?
The government dictated that.
Okay.
Most of the people that were processed through Empalme in Mexico, that was their checkpoint in Mexico, come through Nogales. And the people that come through Nogales went to the northern part of our state. And for some reason, we as Cochise County had to go through El Paso. And the only reason we got to go to Nogales, as I said, was that special. Because they had so much poverty in Agua Prieta that they made that special thing. We probably took 300 people out of there during that whole time. I'm trying to think now. I believe we took those guys to Nogales, and they had on one or two occasions we had to take them to Nogales, and they had to spend the night. The government had big barracks in Nogales, and then we contracted them the next morning. I remember having to stay in Nogales in a motel, but so maybe they either got overwhelmed or didn't get it done or something, you know. But that was the reason. Because they dictated it to us.
Okay. Department of Labor, did you mention the blacklist? Can you tell me, do you remember any farm bureaus or that got in trouble or co-ops?
Right now, I can't. I did at the time because I knew, you know, we all, it was kind of...
Was it common?
No. But we knew who got blacklisted. And I couldn't tell you now, but I know there was that happened.
And what would cause that?
Mistreatment, normally. In some housing, poor housing, mistreatment. I would say, well, this is just me, but I'd say it's probably prejudice in some way, you know.
Would the Department of Labor warn them, or what would be the procedure to get to that point of blacklisted? Do you know?
No, I don't.
Okay.
I don't. I would assume, yes. I would assume that those guys were pretty nice guys. Some of them were Mexican guys that were working for the government. Some of them were white guys, Anglo. But they were all pretty nice guys. Some of them were... They wouldn't be nice to you if there was some kind of little old complaint or if they saw something... Some of them were pretty darn tough if they saw some little something that you better... Correct, you know, it's kind of like us with MSHA. We're governed by the mines, so it depends on the guy a whole lot. You know, we have some good guys comes to eat us out, and then we have other guys that are just nice to us, eat us out in a nice way. You know?
Just depends. Do you, when you took them back to Mexico, or took them back to El Paso or the processing center, did you notice a difference in attitude of the men?
Oh Lord, yeah.
Tell me about it.
Happy, happy, happy. They were happy in a way, in a different way coming, because they didn't, how would you say that? When they were coming, they were anticipation, and when they were going back, it already happened. You know, we got it done, we made some money. I mean, I'm telling you how I thought that they felt, and you'd have to ask one of them. I imagine this guy probably told you already how happy he was. And they were just, it was a different, going home, you know, like you see the serviceman come in. So that was what I observed.
Are there any other stories? You have a couple of notes that we didn't cover that you might, stories that you wanted to share with us? Because we love your story, so we'll sit and wait. We have no problems with that.
Insurance, I discussed the insurance with you. Hourly wage ran from 45 to 55 cents an hour. I discussed that with you. Sunday to town. Brought clothing and et cetera, yes. Sent it to Mexico. We're up. They went on buses, took buses, went home. U.S. Department of Labor and Naturalization is the one that controlled it.
Was it both departments? They each controlled one section?
The Department of Labor actually was one that was in charge of us. That's where our agreement was, but the Immigration and Naturalization brought those guys. They were controlling that border. They controlled, because it was a, you know, just like now, it had to be, you couldn't go down there and they just swing that gate open and let you go to Truman through there. You'd have to be, you'd be controlled right now, I'm sure, by the Immigration and Naturalization, or the, what they call it, Borderland, Border Security, or
ICE.
Some crap.
Yeah.
But anyway, and sorry, that's the way I feel about it. Baker story, yeah. I guess I've told all the dang stories. We, on the plains of Texas, we had one co-op set up a bakery, a big bakery for the whole, he supplied the, all of, his individual did this and supplied, well, it wasn't an individual, it was a co-op, that's what it was. An individual was doing it for the co-ops through another co-op, but they made bleos. And so we went there. God, I used to like to go there. I gained 400 pounds over there because I'd go there and there was cheese there, and I'd put the hot bleo out of that, pull it out of that, pull it out, you know, cut that bleo open, lay two pieces of cheese in there, get out of here. I was in heaven, you know. Used to like to go get it myself, but anyway, they delivered it. So we had bleos too, besides tortillas, and they come from the fresh baked. They baked around the clock for the whole plains of Texas, if you believe. A lot. I picked up another story I could tell. There was a hurricane in Silverton, Texas, and there was a bracero camp there, and it didn't tear the camp up, but it tore the cotton gin, just tore it all to pieces. So I went up there with 10 guys and myself, and we went in, we stayed in the camp, and we cleaned up that all of the metal and all of the stuff that got strewed over this area where a cotton gin was at. We cleaned that all up. We were there about 3 or 4 days. So that was one, I just not remember that, but other than that, I can't think of.
You mentioned a bus company in Brownsville.
Mm-hmm.
Was that, do you remember the name of that bus company?
My wife and I were talking about that last evening, and I, good God, that's terrible that you can't, but this guy went in the business because, like any entrepreneur, and I think he was already in the farm labor business, local labor. You know, how they have farm labor things. And then he saw this opportunity, and that's when he bought special buses. They were real big son of a guns, and they were special for coming to West Texas. I told her last night, if I remember correctly, he only charged $3 a man to bring them all the way from Brownsville to Lubbock, Texas, to Plainview, Texas. A long way. It's over 500 miles. And so he had to haul a lot of guys. But other than that, that's all I can tell you. I can't tell you the name of it to save my soul.
Tell me, you said there's only, in Wilcox, there was only you and John. Who maintains the bus?
Oh, mechanics.
You had mechanics?
Shop. Well, no, they had shops there in town.
They did?
There
was
anything wrong with it.
Did you have any problems getting
stuck?
No,
we never broke down.
Knock on wood, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. My wife and I, we took a load. She'd go with me occasionally, and we took a load to El Paso one day, and coming back that evening, God, old Friday, it was cold, that old wind was blowing from out through there between Deming and Cruces, and God, it got cold in that damned old bus. And I can't remember why or if there was a blanket left on there, but she wrapped up in the damn blanket, and I sat there, and almost, we didn't get home till like 11 o'clock at night. We were froze. She almost reneged on going with me again. That school teacher didn't like that.
It's too cold.
Oh, it was too cold. Absolutely.
All right. Well, thank you, Mr. Smith.
Thank you.
That was